Build a website before you build a workplace. Don't treat your business website like logistics. Treat it like an employee. A website should be designed so that a visitor should go to the cart with confidence and not to your contact page with confusion. You guessed it. Today, we're talking about websites. We're talking about how to build trust with your website. If you're ready for strategy talks, stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Let's strategize together. Let's hear it from an expert. Join the conversation. It's informative and free. You and me, let's talk some strategy. Now here's your host, Doreen Morin Van Dam.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Strategy Talks. If you're here live with us on Facebook or LinkedIn or YouTube, let us know in the comments where you're joining us from. If you're watching Strategy Talks on the replay, put hashtag replay in the comments so myself and my guests can see those questions you may have or those encouragements you may have for us. And last but not least, if you're listening to Strategy Talks as a podcast, we welcome you as well. Today, we're going to talk about websites and how to build trust with your website. And I invited a wonderful expert. And so without much further ado, I'm going to bring him up on stage. My friend Ray Mitchell is here. Ray, you're in North Carolina, correct?
Yeah, that's right, Doreen. I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Yeah, so I'm so glad you're here. But you said, I read your bio, you're a New Yorker, right?
That's right. Yeah, I was born in New York. After college, I moved down to North Carolina. And at this point, I've lived in North Carolina longer than I lived anywhere else. So
yeah, but you're always a New Yorker. I have that. I was born in the Netherlands, moved here when I was 18. I've lived here twice as long as I lived there. But yes, for always Dutch. So totally get that. Ray, we're going to talk about websites and building trust. But before we do that, I want to ask this question. We were kind of discussing this in the green room, and I see we already have some people here listening and watching. So the question is, 13 years ago when I started my business, websites were super important. That's where you made the sale. With the new social media platforms where you can make sales, like on TikTok, people are selling on Facebook, on Instagram, right? They're selling in their DMs, they're selling on their, you know, they're just selling on the social media platforms. How important are websites, and how important is it to build one where you can sell something?
Well, they're not really important anymore. So I guess I'll see. No, they still remain to be important. I will start off by saying I am a WordPress evangelist. And I will read you from the book of Matthew, AutoMath, that is. But no, websites are important, but the technology and the platforms have changed so much. You can probably get away, if you're very small, without a website. People build their businesses around TikTok and around Facebook, and you can get a lot of audience there. But as we know, sometimes the algorithm will work against your business. But more important, you can see, at least in the US, the regulatory environment may influence how your business is treated on those sites. You know, Facebook changes at times have seemed very arbitrary. I'm dealing with one of those myself at the moment. But at the same time, those platforms give everybody the ability to be online, whether it's just for social reasons, whether it's to promote yourself or to promote a product. So you can actually operate e-commerce from your online platform, whether it's a true website or the social media platforms. In fact, Shopify actually has a product, their Shopify Lite product, that works very well for social selling, where you can put a featured product on your TikTok page or on your Instagram page and actually have the power of the Shopify engine in the background, managing your sales inventory and actually the start of that delivery process. So it's possible to do even without a website.
I think that is awesome. You were talking about that in the green room, and I wasn't quite aware. So that's great if you have a really small business, right? If you have a startup, or if you don't have all the, you know, all the money to invest in a website. So here's a question, side question, but I kind of want to know your answer. What should somebody expect? Somebody who starts a business, what should they expect to invest in a website?
That's a hard question. And I always tell people, you know, how much is a house or how much is a car? You really can't tell, right? You know, how much is a website? You really can't tell until you know what you need, right? Are you a student living in New York City that's got a short walk to work? Well, maybe a one-bedroom studio is fine. But if you're in New York City, and you're like Jim Gaffigan with the whole army of kids, that one bedroom is not going to suit you, even though it's a very, very affordable price. So it's key to the functionality that you need. It's key to what the purpose of the website is and whether it's okay for it, maybe not to function optimally or looked pixel perfect, but suffice to get your message across. So I know you're looking for a number. It's not unreasonable to get a one-page site for $700, but you know they can go up from there because it takes as much care to run your business on a one-page site as it does on a multi-page site. In today's money, it's not unreasonable to spend between $2,500 and $3,500 for an introductory site.
All right.
You can do that a lot less if you're willing to roll up your sleeves and do a little of the work yourself.
Yeah. So that gets me to, you speak at WordCamp, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And for those who don't know what that is.
Oh, I thought you were going to introduce that.
Yeah.
WordCamps are held across the globe in local cities, big regional events and big national events. WordCamps are the users conferences for WordPress users. Taking people who have never seen a WordPress site and are afraid of code and putting in the same room with people who are, you know, top shelf designers and coders, people who literally have built the websites for NASA at WordCamp US. That was a very recent presentation. But it's an opportunity for everybody to share their knowledge and help everyone grow in their skills in using WordPress. And that's a great place to learn if you want to try and build your own website. Additionally, all those presentations are available on WordPress TV, WordPress.tv, where you can see previous presentations and get your questions answered.
That's awesome. So for those who are marketers who are listening to this, if you're like me, you probably have access to all of your clients' backends of their websites. I have access to Squarespace and Wix and WordPress and all the different things. So you kind of see the bells and whistles, but often... content managers are in charge or partly in charge of maybe the content piece of the blog. So you will need to know how to do some SEO and some backend stuff. I usually don't get into, updating the website at all. And I know with WordPress, one of the things that needs to be updated frequently are in the backend are some of those plugins. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Today, we're going to talk about creating a website that builds trust. I just kind of wanted to set the stage of your expertise and what you do with WordPress. So, Ray, what are some of the mistakes that you've seen people, whether that's a business owner who insists on doing this and that with their website, or people who don't know how to create websites, what are some of the mistakes they make? And I preface it with this. I have... over the last 13 years, have at least met 10, 15 people who come to me with a website that's not functional, that doesn't do what it's supposed to do for them. And they're upset because they've paid a lot of money and they've invested a lot of time. And yet I have to tell them that we probably have to rebuild it or they probably have to go and rebuild it. So what are some of those mistakes that you see that people make all the time?
I think the biggest mistake that people have when they're doing their own website or writing the content for themselves is thinking that the website is actually for them. You know, there's no man so perfect as he is on his own resume. There's no website so perfect as my own website. And they try to make it in their own image that really speaks to them. But if the goal is to actually attract customers who aren't you, you need to make the website so that it actually attracts those other people. You know, there's a joke in the design community about the website owner always wanting the logo to be bigger because they're proud of the logo. But your client is not coming to the website for the logo. They're actually coming for the information that helps them make a decision to do business with you. And the offering them the content and the information they need to make a rational decision to get them to do what you want them to do, pick up the phone, place the order, that's what you've got to be focused on. And that's why I, you know, really focus on making sure that, you know, from a trust perspective, you know, it's easy for people to trust you. And if it's easy for them to trust you, it's a little easier for them to take the action and that call to action that we always talk about.
Yeah.
I laugh about that because people sometimes forget to actually even put a call to action on the page and wonder why they're not getting leads or contacts.
Right. So what are some other blind spots that you've seen, especially business owners? And if you're listening and you're a business owner and you're in the process of building a website or updating your website, or maybe you want to rebrand, or maybe you know your website isn't producing the results you want. Maybe you have no conversions, or maybe you have very little traffic, right? So what are some of the blind spots that you see that people have about their website?
I think one of the bigger blind spots or false expectations that we set is expecting people to come to the website and immediately convert to a customer. And that's not the process in most any aspect of real life. People typically don't connect on the first date. And you know, when we talk about trust and we talk about websites, you know, I literally kind of align it with that dating process. You know, Doreen, you're a very beautiful woman and this is the first time that we're seeing each other. I think we should get married today. You know, if I came to you with that, you might be flattered, but then at the same token, you might think I was crazy. And there's no way that you would immediately commit to, you know, a high ticket purchase or maybe even a small ticket purchase. Yeah, you probably wouldn't even want to give your real email address for an opt-in form. Right. So, you know, creating an environment where people feel comfortable, can believe in the information that you're presenting, and it intrigues them enough to want to reach out and communicate with you either by phone or by filling in your opt-in form. That's really the goal with any website.
That's great. And so part of that is done with design, making people feel at home. Part of that is done with content. So what kind of content is missing, or what kind of content what's missing from a website, or what kind of content do you see that people have that is that trust building?
Well, again, yeah, I relate this whole thing to the dating process. So I think my proposal is still out to you. You can answer it at the end of the show. But if you think about visiting a website like dating, the things that become important are the first impression. You know, what's that impression when you actually land on the site? What does it look like? What does it feel like? You know, if you're seen with this person on a date, what are your friends going to think about that person and think about you, right? When you're with this person and it's late at night, it starts to get dark, do you feel safe, right? Do you feel protected? Do you feel that, you know, you're going to be okay? And the most important thing after you've been together a little while is, are you worth the trouble? Are you really worth the trouble of us being together in this relationship? And people have that same perception when they go to your website. You know, the first impression really is the design. What does it look like? Does it fit the expectation they have for your business? If you're a bank, shouldn't it look like a traditional bank site and less like the club on 59th Street? So you've got to make sure that the design pieces are congruent with the experience people are having. We still have people using free websites that are on, you know, mywebsite.freewebsitebuilder.com. You know, if you want to build credibility, you know, don't use that free domain. Actually build your website under your own domain. Spend the $9, $12, $15 to have a real presence.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So as far as content, one of the things that as a social media manager that I see, I do a lot of competitors analysis, right? When I get in a new client and we do a strategy, I'll ask them for their top 4 to 5 competitors and I'll line them all up. I've got my double screen and I'm going to go pull them all up and I'm going to look from website to website to website to website and kind of see what other people are doing in the industry. And I recently did one where the industry is SaaS software, right? And every single one, every single website looked the same, right? It had the same corporate feel, well, technology feel. And then I went to social media and every single one of the competitors had followed that feel through to social, which might work for the website to build trust, but on social, it flopped for all of the competitors. So I'm now working with this client where everybody, he's where everybody goes left, he's going right. So even though the website looks professional and, you know, in that technology sphere, the social media is all people. It's all little videos. It's all explanations. It's all welcoming. It's funny. It has memes. It has different things. So how important do you think it is to find that voice that you have on social and carry it through to the website? Is it okay to have that disconnect as long as the branding is there? Have you?
I think, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking that that really is the true essence of branding, right? So for the website, yeah, you do want to look industry appropriate. There's still room for personality. You initially asked a question about content. The content is really how well you answer your site visitor's question. And to the degree which you can actually give them the information they're looking for and answer the common questions, you're more likely to have success. That being said, you can have a website that's functionally identical to all of your competitors. Think of fast food chains. You know, looking at a Burger King website, kind of looks like a McDonald's website, kind of looks like a Wendy's website. But if you looked at their social presence, Wendy's social presence is definitely a lot different and definitely a lot more edgy. And as a result, they have a stronger following or a more passionate following. McDonald's may have more numerical followers, people who liked McDonald's back in 2010, 2011. Right. They're likers and they follow them. But the passionate followers, the ones that really go behind the brand, are really intrigued by what Wendy's social marketing position is. So it's a balance of both.
Okay, so how do we convert, or what is needed to convert somebody, a website visitor, you know, with a merits proposal is on the table, into somebody who says yes? How many clicks does it take? How many visits does it take? What does it take to get there from a website perspective?
Well, it's still, I think, unless you are very well known outside of your website and people are coming to your website for a specific purpose, to maybe based on your social media post and the environment on social, you finally have that call to action, go sign up for the webinar on my website. Those are the only people who are immediately going to go website visit first time, plunk down the $47, plunk down whatever that amount is to convert. Most other people need to go through a process of visiting your website, getting their answers that they're seeking in order to make the decision, feeling comfortable enough with you to do that, and then going through a frictionless process to actually make that sale. So your website needs to be composed of information that's really relevant to the offer that you're trying to make, whether that sale is just as simple as call us for a free estimate, or something as complex as sign up for a 36-month service plan for these copiers. It's got to give them enough information that they can make a rational decision to do that. And then once they've decided to do that, make the process as frictionless as possible to get the credit card information. So don't make them sign up for an account before they put the delivery address in. You know, have them put the credit card information on a separate, you know, on a two-step form, so that they spent the time doing the first part and are somewhat committed when you finally ask them to go ahead and do the second part, providing the card information, the delivery information.
All right. So I have a question that's kind of off to the side, but this is something that comes up as a social media marketer. And if you're watching and you're a marketer, I'm sure you have the same question in your head, and I've done both sides. So here's the question, Raymond. A lot of times when people need to rebrand or redo a website, there needs to be content written. And I have talked to many people who think that the business owner or the CEO or the CMO is in charge of writing the content. So they will hire a website expert or designer, right? So you have a website designer who then might copy an old website for the content unless the owner rewrites content. So I'm trying to wrap my head around, because this happened last year with a client of mine where money was spent on a website and I was pulled in after. So the website was already live. And I said, so I asked the question, who wrote the content? And they said, oh, we just copied the content from the old website into the new website. And I got off the phone call and the client called me and she goes, that was wrong, wasn't it? And I'm like, well, if you're spending money on a new website and a new design, I'm thinking you might also need an updated piece of content. She goes, well, they didn't ask me. And I said, well, I think it's time to talk about who's going to do that. Who's going to write that? You're either going to write a copywriter or hire me, or you can do work together. Where does that process start? Who leads that conversation? Do you do that?
Yeah, you're asking a pretty hard question.
Okay. All right.
Clients don't like necessarily to spend money over and above what they've done
to
develop the website. That being said, that's always a question. As much as I love the clients that I work with, and as much as I love working with people, and I can do some writing, there's no one more convincing or more compelling about your business than you are. There's no one who understands it as deeply as you do. So the client, or in this case, the business owner, needs to be responsible at some level for the content that goes on the website. The trigger of building a new website is the perfect trigger to reassess whether we need to adjust our message. A website, realistically, and I'm saying this not because I sell websites, it's good for about 3 years, right? The styles of the website from a design perspective may change, functionality that's available and the content that you have will change, but your business should have changed in those 3 years. If we look back 3 years, we were just coming out of COVID. If your message is a pre-COVID message, and I say websites lasted 3 years, I end up talking to people 5 to 7 to 10 years after their last design. If your website doesn't reflect the reality of how we do business post-COVID, you're probably not going to have a message that resonates with clients. So I can't say whose fault it is that the content wasn't updated, but I can say that the redesign, the total redesign or rebuilding of a website, or even an internal redesign of the site, should call for an audit of your current content to see whether it's still relevant and still speaks to the people you're trying to reach today.
That's really great. So, and I agree with that. And boy, do most people that I know not update their website every 3 years, including moi. I've been working on my website rebuild since January.
And it's not done. No clothes. I'm guilty as well, right?
Yeah. So that brings me to the next piece, right? Talk about community. All of us, including me, marketers out there, business owners, we are building an online social media community, right? Whether we have a Facebook group, whether we have a Slack channel, whether we have a podcast, a live show, we're building an audience, we have an email list, right? When we talk about that, how can we merge all of those goals that we have? We want more sales, we want more visibility with what we see on our website.
I think it's giving, again, it's a tone thing, right? There are some businesses that you don't necessarily want to be friends with. A website for a mortuary is not going to have a vibrant, robust online presence off the website. It's a very functional and transactional type of thing.
Right.
But for websites that have products that inherently in the nature of the products, they build community, sports teams, sports leagues, restaurants, daycare and family services. Your social persona is a good way to extend that and invite people to your website. But your website should always encourage and engage people to be engaged and form and be part of that community. So whether it's bringing in videos that you post on YouTube or a reel that you have on Instagram, or encouraging people to go visit those sites for additional content. That's the way that you can build community and leverage the benefit of your content strategy to help grow the business.
So you show what you do on social media on your website, and you connect it to that way, right? And
we use, yes.
Yeah.
It's a component. I mean, you can, you know, if you were to put it the bottom third of the page in a talk, when you scroll down to the bottom third, just above the footer section, our latest Facebook video, our latest YouTube video with the link to the YouTube site, or and a subscribe button will drive people to that social presence. The contact page is not just for the form that they're going to put their name, email address, and subject in. It's an opportunity for you also to showcase your content and where people can consume it. So all those things can tie together to make the site more robust.
That's really great. Before we wrap it up, and I can't believe we're 25 minutes into the conversation, tell us a little bit more about WordPress. I know when I started out 13 years ago, I started my website on WordPress. What I ran into, and as a solopreneur, as a freelancer, is that I wasn't equipped. I should have gone to WordCamp. Now I know. I wasn't equipped to update these plugins. I did take a couple of online courses, and I thought I could do it. But at one point, my website just completely crashed. What should people expect? Should they learn this? I know at WordCamp, that's what you teach. Do you find that hiring, say, a webmaster is important? Let's talk about that.
All of the above. But you can learn to do it yourself, and a lot of sites crash because they're neglected. The updates and the technical pieces on the website are neglected. They shouldn't be. But you can go ahead and start learning how to back up your theme and website. And it's not a very difficult task. You can hire somebody if you have the availability to do it. But if you don't have the cash to do that, take a moment to try and learn. The one recommendation that I will make is that the first purchase you should get, and it's worth, if you're using your website for business and it's more than a hobby, the first plugin you should buy is a good backup plugin. That's the thing, because if your site goes down, you can restore the site from a backup. But if you don't have a backup, and don't just rely on your hosting company maybe to provide a backup, because a lot of times you'll be dissatisfied with what happens there. But if you have a backup plugin and set it to backup on a regular basis, offsite, not directly on the website, but sending you a copy to Dropbox or something like that, you can have the confidence that, you know, if I break my site or it goes down, I can restore it to before it broke and get somebody else to look at it. So get a backup plugin and start with the backup. And then from that point, you can go ahead and do things slowly but surely until you get a comfort level with updating your plugins, updating your theme, updating the core WordPress. It's not hard, but if you take those precautions, you'll have a healthy website that'll last many years.
That's a great tip. I love that. I don't think I ever did that. I don't know if I had a plugin for backup. So that's a great, if you're using WordPress, guys, do that. Go check, go in the back end and see if you have that. So is there anything else that you want people to know about WordPress? Why do you love it so much?
The way I talk about it with my clients, when I'm pitching a client, you know, WordPress is over 40% of the internet now. So literally, out of every 10 sites you go to, 4 of them are WordPress, which is a big accomplishment because it has such a great market share. That means there's always someone there who can work on it, and there's always someone there who can help you with it. That's a great advantage. But I also tell them, you know, WordPress is easy enough for the Cub Scouts, the old ladies at church, and for just regular people to actually set up a blog post or create a page. If you can fill out the forms on an email, you can actually create a page or a post in WordPress. It's that right. Simple. But it's powerful enough that big sites like Rolling Stone and Harvard Business Review and Sports Illustrated and the blog at Facebook have used WordPress, and New York Times have used WordPress as a component of their online delivery strategy. Now, those sites are made up a little bit more robustly than, you know, the $3 hosting that you would get when you buy online. But it's the same core functionality that we have in WordPress. And that's the beauty and the power of WordPress. And that's why I'm so wrapped into WordPress, the culture, and that community.
That makes sense. Well, I love this conversation, Ray. If people are watching this and they're like, it's been 5 years, 10 years, I need to update my website. I need to learn more. I want to learn more about WordPress. You also wrote a book last year. Where can they meet you and where can they connect with you?
All right. The best way, and most people are here on LinkedIn. You can look for me on LinkedIn. And Doreen, please put it in the show notes. But
I will.
I'm Raymond Mitchell on LinkedIn, R-A-Y-M-U-N-D Mitchell on LinkedIn. If you're interested in the book, you can go to Magical Coach websites and actually get a copy of the first chapter of the book. But those are good ways to get in touch with me. Don't really have a strong online presence, which is something I probably need to talk to you about. But you can follow me at Made For You Media on Twitter. Okay. I'm still one of the old people that call it Twitter. It'll never be X. Never.
All right. Well, I appreciate you spending time with me and my audience today, Raymond. It has been wonderful to learn more about WordPress. You might have converted me back to WordPress. I need to talk to you about that. So if you've been listening, connect with Raymond. I will put his link in the show notes as well as in the comments where this has gone live so you can connect with him. Learn more. Don't be afraid of WordPress. I was really afraid for a while there. And so even especially the updates and stuff. But this one tip that Ray gave is amazing. So go back and watch that if you missed it, if you just tuned in late. Thank you so much for being with us today. I will be back next week with another episode of Strategy Talks. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye. Thanks.